南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。
Hello, friends. It's an absolutely gorgeous day today here in Northeast Mississippi. I know I make an announcement of that like it's just in this area of the world, this kind of gorgeous, temperate, clear weather is very rare. In the 365 approximate days of a year, we have very few of those we can count on our hands around spring and fall that it's quite notable when we have these beautiful days. And it reminds me, conversely, that, you know, I always wish or I don't know what word to use. I want all of you to be experiencing good health and security. This is a big part of our Bodhisattva practice, right? To be kind to ourselves and others, not just in words, but in support, right? In inclusiveness, in our Bodhi mission. And I can't help but come to mind all of the regions in the world right now that are under such tremendous obstacles, hardships, really tragedies, right? Taiwan just had a really devastating earthquake. They're not the only place. There's a lot in Asia and in Europe, in Britain, the fires going on, the war, the pseudo war. I mean, it's war, you know, with Russia and Ukraine, and you know, easy to forget all the other places that wars are happening, you know, Yemen and you know what Palestine is going through, and it's just insane how much unrest there is in the world today. So just as much as I wish, again, there's that word again, that I strongly abhor the violence and the negativity that's manifesting all over the world. It is a product of human contrivance. You know, who else creates war? Namo Myo Renge Kyo. We've got to spread this teaching. We've got to change more minds and hearts. Yeah. And it starts with me. Ourselves, I mean. Not me particularly, but all of our own personal responsibility in recognizing that things are out of control. This is the age of degeneration. This is the age of Mapo. This is the age of losing our grasp of the preciousness of life, right? The Lotus Sutra teaching, the self-enlightenment teaching, that Dharma is in a great struggle and could be lost forever lest we stand up and recognize its value. All right, that I would say is the preaching part of today's video. I apologize if that makes you feel uncomfortable, but I just really feel it this morning. Not that it's the only morning, but it's just very strong today. Thinking of all of our Sangha out there in the world, in all these places, with fires, earthquakes, wars, and so forth. I know some of you are very close to it and may have been and are being affected by it. So, yeah, I'm Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. All right, we're in the chapter on offering the law. So maybe that ovation to this video was somehow appropriate. Seems to be some kind of rhythm to all of this, yeah? So let's go on. We ended yesterday. The son, what is the offering of the law? The heavenly being replied, you should go and ask the thus come one medicine king. He will explain it to you in detail, the offering of the law. And so this brings us to this video. At once the prince moon parasol went to call on the thus come one medicine king, doing as directed. After bowing his head in obeisance at the Buddha's feet, he retired to one side and addressed the Buddha, saying, quote, world-honored one, among all offerings, the offering of the law is the finest. But what is the offering of the law? Big question, yeah? How do we do that? How do you and I offer the law to our fellow minds, sentient minds, our fellow beings, yeah? The Buddha said, good man, the offering of the law means the profound sutras preached by the Buddhas. All right, I could have predicted that answer, but it doesn't seem complete, does it? So let's go on. The people of this world all find them hard to believe and hard to accept. For they are wonderfully subtle and hard to make out, clean and pure and without stain. They cannot be grasped through the making of distinctions or through thought. Because our samsaric minds think in order to distinguish and identify. So it's a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? We have to use that device of our samsaric mind to transcend the thinking and the words to reach an experience. An experience always transcends the words that we might use to try to describe an experience. That's not hard to understand, is it? It's hard to talk about, but it's something to be had. And this is, the Lotus Sutra does this, right? This is why we chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, to simply invoke the experience. But let's move on. They are contained in the storehouse of the Bodhisattva and are sealed with the Dharani seal. What is that? The seal of memory that ensures full retention of the teachings. All right. Habit energy, yeah? And where this seal is affixed, one reaches the level of no regression. So this requires constant training of the mind. This is the chanting. This is the recitation. This is the reading recitation part of our practice, yeah? They bring about observance of the six paramitas, altered behavior, the skillful discrimination of meanings, there's that key idea again, understanding beyond memorization, beyond the words. What are we trying to reach, accomplish, experience here? And compliance with the teachings of Bodhi. And through the finest of all sutras, one enters the realm of great pity and compassion. It's the result of this shift, this paradigm shift of realizing the moment, realizing our momentum through life, the way all phenomena instantiate and continue to instantiate within the parameters of their tendencies and conditions, and how that can be influenced. The sutras put an end to all devilish affairs and all erroneous views, conform to the teaching on causality and those on no ego, no individual, no living beings, no lifespan, emptiness, no form, no action, and no arousing. They enable living beings to sit in the place of practice and to turn the wheel of the law. That's a huge mouthful. And we, you know, as we study through hundreds of videos on different sutras throughout the teaching lifetime of Shakyamuni, and certainly the Lotus Sutra and Nichiren's elucidations and doctrines, this is the subject matter, put simply. I mean, in one sentence with commas, he said every concept that Buddhism has annihilated and analyzed to the nth degree. And I say annihilated not because I'm a nihilist, but annihilated its grip on reality. How many times in scientific endeavors, in the progress of mankind, have things that seem to be concrete knowledge upon further investigation kind of dissolved into a much more profound understanding, to the point where those initial concrete knowledges kind of evaporate. They in many cases become nonsense, obstacles to understanding, simply by dissecting them, taking apart and understanding their origins. And Buddhism is the ultimate analysis, right? All the way down to energy, whatever that is, right? And yet, whatever that is the foundational component that is acted upon, modified, assembled in order to instantiate everything. Like we were talking about protons the other day, electrons, right? You can go on YouTube right now and type in, why are all electrons the same? And you'll end up finding out that all electrons, the zillions and billions that are in every thing, are all the same because they're part of an electron field that pervades the entire universe, and they're just instantiations of that field. That's why they're all the same. This homogeny continues to come up in every minutia of understanding. It should be very inspiring as a Buddhist to go, oh, there's that oneness thing again. We're all instantiation of, I'll make a statement here, I'll make it up, but in the concept of our conversation, the field of life is the universe and everything in it. There's a visual. We are instantiations of the field of life. Just like the sentient mind is an emergent property of that field and what it's doing. Heavenly beings, dragon spirits, Gandharvas, and the others join in praising them. They can enable living beings to enter the storehouse of the Buddha law. They embrace the comprehensive wisdom of the worthies and sages, expound the way practiced by the bodhisattvas, replying Relying on the principle of the true nature of all phenomena, they clearly set forth the doctrines of impermanence, suffering, emptiness, no ego, and tranquil extinction. They can save all living beings who violate the prohibitions, and in all devils, non-Buddhist believers, and those given to greed and attachment, they can inspire fear. Not sure about that. Buddhas, worthies, and sages join in extolling them. They turn away from the sufferings of birth and death and show instead the joy of nirvana. They are preached by the Buddhas of the 10 directions and the 3 existences of past, present, and future. So, again, another paragraph of stating the breadth of teachings. So we haven't learned anything yet other than it is the Bodhisattva way to use this storehouse of teachings of Shakyamuni's to help enable others to analyze their own existence, their own life, what is going on in their being. In order to spread and inspire the activity, the practice, the commitment to, the resolve for Buddhaness, for enlightenment, one first has to have some grasp of what they are enlightening. Right? It's one thing to understand turning a light on in an attic, but if you've never spent any time looking around your attic, then it's a very abstract thing to think of turning on a light in it. What good would that make? However, with your own attic firmly dissected, understanding the difference of the contents of or experience of that attic with or without a light on starts to take on a personal meaning, right? In the same way, as we go through the expedient means and these stories and so forth, we talk about different aspects of doubt and resolve and what it means to this or that. We start to create a better picture in our samsaric mind of what it is we're liberating ourselves from, right? I'm free. What do you mean emancipation? You don't understand how free you're not until you start to dissect your life experience by virtue of thought, analysis, expedient means. And then you start to uncover more of that energy, that momentum, that habit energy that sustains your illusions of possessions and loss and so on and so forth. Right? It's the same pattern every time. And as we dissect and we understand our own life experience more profoundly, we develop wisdom. But that wisdom, it happens in the mind, the emergent property, not what is, quote unquote. If one hears sutras such as these, he goes on, believes, understands, accepts, upholds, reads, and recites them, there it is again, and by employing the power of expedient means, makes distinctions and expounds them for the sake of living beings, share, like we're doing right now, sharing our insights, sharing our own story. Rendering their meaning perfectly clear, one is thereby guarding and protecting the law, and this is called offering of the law. So you could, in a very simple way, say, share the practice, share the teaching. Don't see yourself as a teacher, as I've pointed out many times, we are our only teacher. You cannot change people's minds. Only those minds can change themselves. That's the bottom line. But how do we ingratiate? How do we involve? How do we grab the attention of those minds and inspire them and guide them and support them in their own desire, their own curiosity, their own motivation to change? Well, we're right back in samsara with that question, aren't we? So this is why I say so often, once we grapple with our own story, and the more we enlighten our experience of life, the more we imbue our environment, because our environment is us, a reflection of us. We carry a sort of an aura about us. You ever notice there are certain people you know, friends or associates, or maybe you don't even know them personally, but when they enter a room, you feel them? Usually we notice that about negative people. Oh gosh, here's so-and-so, right? It's very amorphous and not specific, but we know it's a drag. Or when another person enters the room, cool, so-and-so's here. Don't even know why. Just when that person enters a room, things seem to elevate. I mean, that's very real experience, isn't it? Try to put words to it. But that's what we're talking about here. If in life, you carry with you your practice of enlightenment, you will exude the pheromone of chanting. I know, I'm giving you visual fodder to think about. It's like that. A long time ago, I used the Peanuts character, you know, Pigpen, with this little dirt cloud around him all the time, even when he's standing still. That Amala consciousness, that karmic repository of tendencies and conditions, right? It's a visual reminder that we're not just our fingers and bones and bodies. We are an entity of influence. We are a mind moving through time, space. We are a momentum of energies. And our momentum, the only way you can sense your momentum is in samsara, because you can't have momentum without an environment that contains it. If there were no environment connected to your momentum, then there would be no momentum. There'd be nothing to experience. The two coexist as a fundamental singular activity. So as we course through the world, we affect, influence, with our life condition, everything around us. We are that person entering the room which affects everyone else. We recognize it when others do it. Why don't we recognize it when we do it? Take responsibility for that. I know, that's a biggie, right? Keeps us honest. Again, the sutras enable one to practice the teachings as the law directs, to accord with the 12-linked causal chain. He's reviewing all the teachings, right? The nidana, all of these concepts. The practice allows us to think in this way, to understand in this way, to realize once and for all that there is no ego, no existence of living beings, no deviating from or disputing with the law of cause and effect, thus removing all thought of personal possession. So you see the struggle again with words, trying to define this knowing, this experience of living, but liberated from the physicality of living. Living then transcends physical living being, but becomes mental being. Because that's where it's all happening. Without the mind, it's just stuff. Laying around. Dust balls rolling in the breeze. Might seem a little harsh, but truly, people live their entire lives as dust balls rolling in the breeze. Then the question comes, is that truly living? To the ignorant, yeah, they don't know any better. That is crassly stated, our challenge as bodhisattvas. To show those people that there's a lot more to living than they expect, that they take for granted. And we do that with the teachings, expedient means, sharing an alternative understanding, a deeper, more profound experience of life. They teach one to rely on meaning, not on words. To rely on wisdom, not on consciousness. To rely on sutras that are complete in meaning, not on those that are incomplete in meaning. To rely on the law, not on the person. Oh my gosh. How many times have we read these things from Nichiren? From the Lotus Sutra? I'll remind you again, this Vimalakirti Sutra is a much earlier, years earlier, sutra of Mahayana teachings by Shakyamuni. Here are the exact same words. These are translations, obviously, but conceptually, these are the exact same ideas. Nothing has changed. Just you and I, the practicing mind, the student of the bodhisattva mind, that is what you and I bring to it. This is why we can see the consistency. To go along with the true form of things, realizing that there is no entering in and no destination. This is just an ongoing moment-to-moment experience, momentum through creating time-space. They teach that science, they teach that since ignorance in the end does not exist, it's just plummeting along. So from the standpoint of a conscious experience, a realization, it doesn't exist. But it does exist in a physical form. We can question whether or not that exists or just is a state. Yeah? Words. So too, action in the end does not exist. And so on through the other links in the 12-linked chain of causation, down to the fact that since birth in the end does not exist, so too, old age and death in the end do not exist. And when one learns to see in this manner, the 12-linked chain of causation will cease to have any form that comes to an end, and one will no longer entertain the view that it does. This is called the finest of all offerings of the law. Now, how many times have you heard me go over this thing about the mind and emergent property of this momentum of karma, and that when this momentum of physical support for that emergent mind ends, then so too does the mind that emerges from it. this idea in the 12-length causal chain that all phenomena are instantiations of potentials building an amalgam on themselves until they express and then they exist for a time, whatever time is, until they then, like bubbles in a froth of bubble bath, boop, they just disappear. They no longer are, exist, whatever verbiage you want to put around it. Every phenomena in the universe, including the universe, is like this. From energies, quietude, quiescence, arise, excitements, sparks, combinations, to express and dissolve. It's this constant. And we, as samsaric physical beings, attach an idea of ego identification to that process, and we in mind make it last. But the truth is, everything is momentary. We can have an experience of that momentary phantasm of sparks amalgamating and expressing. How amazing every moment, the 4th of July or whatever, you know, fireworks display date you want to apply. And in that way, every moment is it's so precious. And at the same time as it's precious, what makes it precious is that it comes and goes. It can only be experienced in the successive moments. Trying to drag it along with you, ever try to grab a fireworks after it's expressed itself and bring it along with you? You can't bring those sparks and phosphors and along with you. You can only repeat. And every repetition is different. It's its own manifestation, right? That is how everything exists, quote unquote. Realizing that, for one thing, makes you appreciate every moment more and more, but it also makes you very appreciative of the other moments that are happening all around you, instantiated through their emergent mind of experience. That's where that compassion comes in, because for all of those sparks, many don't see them. They're just plummeting along through life. And that makes you ache. Oh my gosh, you're missing so much. That's the pity and compassion thing. They teach one to rely on meaning, not words, rely on wisdom, not consciousness, rely on sutras that are complete in meaning, rely on meaning, on the law, not the person, because persons are made up identities, right? To go along with the true form of things, realizing there is no entering in and no destination, they teach that since ignorance in the end does not exist, so too does action in the end not exist, and so on through the other links in the 12-link causal chain, down to the fact that birth does not exist, old age, death do not exist. And when one learns to see in this manner, the 12-link chain of causation will cease to have any form that comes to an end, and one will no longer entertain the view that it does. This is called the finest of all offerings of the law. This is a very difficult thing to inculcate, I can't think of a better word, into our perception of life. And it becomes easier and easier as we chant with our mandala to open that gate in our minds of that perceptive experience. It becomes clearer and clearer. The Buddha, Shakyamuni, then said to the Heavenly Lord, when Prince Moon Parasol heard Medicine King Buddha expound the law in this manner, he acquired a complete or a compliant tolerance of the truth of birthlessness. What does that mean, a compliant? At once he took off his jeweled robes and the ornaments that adorned his body and offered them to the Buddha, saying, World Honor One, after the Thuscum One has passed into extinction, I will carry out offerings of the law and guard the correct law. I beg you, through your might and supernatural powers, to take pity on me and strengthen me so that I can conquer the devil and his enmity and practice the Bodhisattva way. Some of you ask me, what should be my attitude when I approach my Butsudan, when I chant to Mandala of my trying to reach my Gohonzon? My mandala mirror of my Gohonzon, my Buddha-ness. What should be my thoughts? What should be my attitude? And my answer is always the same. Your attitude, very simply, as Nichiren points out, over and as this sutra points out, just be Buddha. Be at one with your Buddha mind. But, you know, this paragraph isn't a bad one. This sentence, World Honored One, after the thus come one has passed into extinction, already happened. I will carry out offerings of the law and guard the correct law. I beg you through your might and supernatural powers, Buddha I'm talking to, Buddha, take pity on me and strengthen me so that I can conquer the devil and his enmity and practice the Bodhisattva way. That could be a way in. Find your own way of saying it. I'm ready for Buddha now. I'm ready to enact my Bodhi, my transcendental mind. I'm ready to live the Bodhisattva way. Find some word salad that you need for yourself to enter into that singular thought, to quote Nichiren, single-mindedly seek Buddha. Where is it? What is it? Put me in it. Awaken my Gohonzon. Awaken my gate to Buddha-ness. Let me live my life in accord with Buddha-ness. Experiment, find your way in. The crux, the central idea here is, don't wish for anything that looks like Buddha, that would provide for you to be able to be, just be Buddha. Everything else is an attachment. Be non-attachment. Literally. This is the attitude. This is the conviction. This is the resolve. The answer, Buddha. Living in this life with that answer is Bodhisattva. Speaking, sharing with others your experience, the teachings of Shakyamuni, you don't have to make it up, all lead to this realization. So you don't have to come up with words. Use Shakyamuni's. Read the manual. It's really easy. The only thing that makes it difficult is your courage to own it. And if you own it every day, if you practice every day, that courage just occurs. That conviction just occurs. And you radiate it. So when you speak, people hear you. Or more correctly, they hear Buddha. Okay? Where are we time-wise? Okay. Oh, computer, leave me alone. The Buddha knew the thoughts that were in his deeply searching mind and bestowed on him a prophecy. In the latter age, you will guard and protect the citadel of the law. Who is this heavenly lord? I forget. Indra, right? Indra. At that time, Prince Moon Parasol, observing the purity of the law and hearing this prophecy bestowed by the Buddha, was moved by conviction to leave the household life and take up the practice of the good law. Obviously, this is an earlier teaching of Mahayana, where there was still this cultural idea that in order to pursue a life of enlightenment, one had to leave behind wife, children, mercantile farm, whatever, as distractions from being able to pursue and accomplish this life of enlightenment. We know, you and I, as Lotus Sutra practitioners, that that's no longer necessary, that this enlightenment is an active participation in all of samsara. That participation, that wife, that child, that job, that farm, that truck, whatever, is enlightenment. It's a perceptive shift. We have the mind that's capable of perceiving everything correctly, without attachment, without past, present, future, as everything is just an part of our experience, our karmic soup, and all of it is enlightenment. Ultimately, because it's a mind shift, a perceptive shift, an experience of this very amazing moment-to-moment life, as all things are. He had not devoted himself to diligent practice for long when he was able to acquire the five transcendental powers, carry out the Bodhisattva way, and gain Dharani power and unflagging eloquence, right? Because with his mind properly focused, everything functioned in concert with that mindset. It's what I was saying earlier. When you actually achieve enlightenment, Namo Myoden Gekyo, all of the same stuff appears different, anew, in its true form. Because you're emancipated from its foibles. And it's not causing those foibles. Your mind is. Right? Your toy truck doesn't have the power to possess you anymore. Because you don't possess it. After the Buddha had passed into extinction, he exercised the transcendental powers he had acquired. The power to retain all he had heard, and the eloquence for fully 10 small kalpas, continuing to turn the wheel of the law, turned by the Thus Come One Medicine King, and spreading the teachings abroad. This monk, Moon Parasol, by guarding and protecting the law, and putting forth diligent effort, was able in the space of his lifetime to convert hundreds, thousands, millions of persons, ensuring that they would never regress in their pursuit of Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. To cause 14 Nayutas of others to develop a profound aspiration for the way of the voice hearer or Pratyeka Buddha, and to enable countless living beings to be born in the Buddha realm. Indra, the person who was King Jeweled Parasol at the time, I have been speaking of, what do you think? He has now become a Buddha named Jewel Flame Thus Come One, and the king's 1,000 sons will become the 1,000 Buddhas who will appear in our present age. the worthy Kalpa. Various sutras predict that 1,000 Buddhas will appear in our present Kalpa or eon, which is accordingly termed the worthy Kalpa. Shakyamuni is the fourth to appear, and Maitreya will be the fifth. Okay. That goes into a lot of history of the structures of the teachings, right? This 10,000 year period of Mapo that we're just in the beginning throes of. Krakuchanda was the first to attain Buddhahood, and the last will be the thus come one named Ruchi. The monk Moon Parasol is none other than myself. There's that catch again that should remind all of us that this is a discussion of mental cognitions, experience, that these personages, the 10,000 Buddhas, the monk Parasol, Moon Parasol, these are all mind states that are being discussed that all ultimately attain Buddha, the one Buddha experience. So all of this I've been talking about is none other than myself. What happened? Thus, Indra, you should understand this important point. The offering of the law is the finest of all offerings. It is first in rank without equal. Therefore, Indra, you should use this offering of the law as your offering to the Buddha. There's that attitude with mandala, by the way, with your Gohanzon. That what you're doing is not praying. You're not asking for this mandala or whatever you envision Gohanzon as to give you anything. See, that's a samsaric misunderstanding. It's core. What you're asking is that your Gohanzon, your Buddha nature, snaps to the fore. Stop riding in the background behind all of this samsaric attachment. Come forward and put everything in its rightful place. Your Buddha-ness is already there. It's just riding in the back seat. When you chant, you want it to come forward. And I haven't done it yet. I've talked about it several times, and gosh, I'm going to have to remember it today. Go watch the. It's just a few months ago, I put up a video on Myoho Rengekyo, 9 consciousnesses. And I drew out on a whiteboard this triangle of movement, momentum through time of the 8 consciousnesses. And the 9th, Myoho Rengekyo, our Buddhahood, being invoked comes and wraps around the entire triangle so that there's nothing lost, but everything is enlightened through Buddha-ness, which has been there all along, just needs to take the driver's seat and not be relegated to the back seat or the trunk. This is what we're trying to do. This is what we actually do when we chant. Namo Myoho Rengekyo, Buddha. Happen now. Click the light on. I haven't come up with any more sophisticated verbiage than that. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe. To those of you who can, beyond liking and subscribing, because that's a great support, and our Bodhisattva use of the YouTube algorithms. But to those of you who can support this effort financially, you know, through Patreon or paypal.me/Sifu Sylvain, or buy books off of our bookstore, make sure you have a good, a correct mandala, right? anything you can do to support our effort, it's bodhisattva work. Namo Myoden Gekyo, thank you. Thank you for displaying your commitment, your courage, your practice. Keep your practice strong, be kind to yourself, and I'll see you in the next one, okay? Bye for now.